program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Good morning. I'm Felicia King, and you're listening to Breakfast Bites. So the topics I have for you today have to do with the Trend Amplified Losses report covering events that happened in the year 2014. As a recap, it's always useful for us to learn about what has happened in the past and learn how that's changing in compared to our previous paradigms of what we could do or needed to do in order to mitigate security risks. And that'll also, we can always utilize that in order to assess if we need to be changing our strategies or if our current strategies are effective enough. So I'm going to go over that Amplified Losses report and also talk about how PayPal is now claiming full ownership over all the intellectual property of its users. Yeah, that's pretty substantial. And then Chrome has just recently released a tool that is designed to help you stop phishing attempts. It's called Password Alert. And interestingly enough, that is directly reported directly related to the number one thing that the Trend Amplified Losses report talked about being the key problem, which was phishing attempts. So the Trend Amplified Attacks report says that compared to all other types of breaching and security penetration problems, phishing attempts by far now, as far as in 2014, and they see that trend continuing into 2015, that is the biggest area of concern and the most successful method utilized for breaching. In fact, the entire dark hotel attack was, I'd say, well, 80-some percent, maybe not the entire thing, but at least 80% of the dark hotel attack was based around phishing attempts, very successful phishing attempts. And so what Google has done as part of Chrome is released this plugin called Password Alert. And with this show, I am putting up a couple links to some articles that talk about password alerts so that you can learn more. So if you are a Chrome user, you may want to utilize this password alert functionality. Basically, what it does is it alerts you if you have accidentally put your password in a non-secure or a non-official username and password box, which certainly is an issue. This is the basis of a lot of phishing attempts, is to trick you into putting in your username and password into fake places. So again, I don't need to go into that in more detail. If you want more on that, just then check out qualityplusconsulting.com. Look at the podcast section, and then you'll see the links associated with this particular podcast. So let me talk briefly about the PayPal issue, and then we can get into the Trend Amplified Reports attack. So PayPal recently changed their user service agreement, and I'll read it to you because it's pretty shocking. They say, when providing us with content or posting content, when in each case for publication, whether on or offline, using our services, you grant the PayPal group a non-exclusive, worldwide, perpetual, irrevocable, royalty-free, sub-licensable right to exercise any and all copyright, publicity, trademarks, database rights, and intellectual property rights that you have in the content in any media known now or in the future. Further, to the fullest extent permitted under applicable law, you waive your moral rights and promise not to assert such rights against the PayPal group, its sublicensees or assignees you represent, and warrant that none of the following infringe on any intellectual property right. Yada, yada, yada. It goes on some more. So this is pretty extreme. It's basically, you have no rights to any intellectual property that you have created if you utilize PayPal as a component of the services either on your site, or if you utilize PayPal in order to collect payment for the purchase, you know, distribution of your content. So this is pretty shocking. And again, if you want to read this for yourself, I will have a direct link to that available with this podcast. Now, let's get on to the Trend Amplified Losses attack or report. Now, this is a recap of 2014. Basically, the scale of impact and losses intensified. 2014 was declared as the year of the point-of-sale RAM scrapers. Heartbleed and shell shock proved that no application was invulnerable. Online and mobile banking had major problems. Ransomware really became a huge threat, like CryptoLocker and such. And threat actors and cyber criminal economies were thriving worldwide. They continue to do so. I think I'll do another show later about the underground economy that's associated with stolen data. And then overall threat volumes were decreasing, but the phishing volume almost doubled. So that's pretty fascinating. So let's get into some of the details of this and find out what we can learn from it. So the main piece at the beginning of this report talks about, and again, I will post up a copy of the report as well. They say the source code repository for CodeSpaces went out of business after an attacker deleted its client databases and backups. Okay, so basically, your business goes out of business because you didn't have enough adequate protection controls in place to make sure that the bad guys weren't able to delete your stuff. And then PF Chang, they had to go back to using manual credit card imprinting devices after a breach because they couldn't utilize their electronic payment point of sale system at all. But the one that I found absolutely fascinating that they talked about in this report was, of course, the Sony Pictures hack. And it was a nice refresher, kind of reminded me of the whole Target breach, where it showed how much a company could lose as an aftermath of a security breach and how dramatically out of alignment the projected losses were were from reality. So the company, Sony themselves, was forced to shut down their network, and they were, of course, compromised by Guardians of Peace. I think you all know that. Now, they reportedly lost 100 terabytes of confidential data as a result. And while Sony Pictures did not declare the cost of the breach, cybersecurity experts from the Center of Strategic and International Studies have estimated the loss for the Sony breach to reach 100 million. Now, other companies under the Sony banner have fallen victim to massive attacks as well. And if we look at this 100 million compared to this whole thought of risk mitigation, let's get into the mind of what one of the company executives thought. And a journalist had pulled up what it was that one of these company executives at Sony was quoted back in 2007 as saying. He said that he would not invest 10 million on security technologies to avoid a $1 million incident. Well, the reality, though, is that it was a $100 million incident. So this is very similar to other breaches that have occurred. You know, the Target breach, that exceeded $100 million. And so if you have to spend $10 million in order to mitigate a risk of a loss of $100 million, well, that sounds like good business practices. And the other thing, too, is that I find that $10 million is not necessarily fully, completely, 100% comprised of annual expenditures. You know, you are looking at saying, okay, well, we're going to put these processes in place that help us do checks and balances. We are going to be doing auditing. We're developing procedures. We are developing strategies and documentation and internal staff competency and improving security protocols in general. So you get leverage and some economies of scale and reusability out of those strategies and efforts. It's not all just simply annual expenditure. Now, clearly, if you look at Target, they were spending $2.5 million a year on FireEye. Okay. Yes, that $2.5 million is an annual expenditure. But there were other things that they should have done that had really nothing to do with an annual expenditure profile. So I go back to an article that I wrote, I think it was early last year, and I was talking about how all CIOs really should be CISSP certified. Because what happens, you know, if you really want to get to the meat and potatoes of what, why are these things happening? It's not because these companies have incompetent IT departments. It's not because they don't have the right staff at the right levels, typically. What is usually happening is that there's IT people, specifically security experts, that are somewheres in middle management or slightly above middle management, and they are saying, look, we need to do XYZ. Except executive management is saying, well, you can't prove to me return on investment. Well, this isn't about return on investment. This is a risk mitigation strategy. This is about an insurance plan. This is about keeping the lights on and making sure that you don't go out of business. So most executives, unless they've actually had that security training themselves, they're working off of a completely busted paradigm. They don't understand how to effectively articulate the messaging to the executive management channel that says, look, yeah, there really is this prioritization that we need to utilize. And sure, okay, we're going to spend $2.5 million on FireEye, but then it's not just that, so I'm glad you all agreed with me to buy it, but I also need your support in terms of actually utilizing that software effectively. And that can have some political fallout. So that was certainly what happened at Target, is that they disabled the automatic malware removal capabilities of FireEye. So why would you spend $2.5 million on a piece of software and then disable its functionality in order to have it be able to assist you? And then they didn't put the proper security response protocols in place. So that was all just internal company politics. And I argue strongly that that occurred because the company did not have a CIO that was CISSP certified. If that CIO had been CISSP certified, that person would have been able to strongly advocate to the right people at the right level for the support in order to actually make utilization, appropriate utilization of the $2.5 million expenditure on FireEye. So I think the same thing had actually happened at Sony based upon the data that we have. So another interesting revelation that Trend came up with here is they say that attackers they found were spending a lot of time doing reconnaissance. A lot of time. And then they adapted their attack strategy to the network, to the business, to the existing security protocols. And because all networks were different, and so each one of the attacks had to be tailored. And they saw that this really came to bear fruit in terms of the strategies that were utilized to do point-of-sale attacks. And in the Trend Amplified reports, they've got a full listing of the top point-of-sale attacks and literally how it was that these point-of-sale attacks were, you know, executed. But they said that the main piece, though, is that almost all of the issues that they found could have been prevented through the use of stronger password management policies and employee awareness training. Now, when Home Depot was breached, they claimed that attackers broke in using the credentials stolen from a vendor. Well, okay, this is basically something very similar to what happened to Target. If you're going to have vendors that have access to your network, then you need to have them using two-factor authentication. They need to comply with your security practices. You should probably have a security practices for partner entities document and have those vendors go through security training as well. So this comes down to stronger password policies, employee awareness training, and vendor vetting. So now the next piece here is also very interesting, I found, was that Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express are tired of the bullplop. And in response to the Target breach, amongst some others, they are now shifting the liability to the retailer, which, frankly, I think is appropriate. So I'll read directly here from the report. They say, in response, the biggest financial institutions worldwide, including Amex, Visa, MasterCard, and Discover, have started shifting the liability from fraudulent transaction theft to the merchants if the merchants do not adopt the EMV payment terminals. Now, the EMV payment terminals are those that use the chip and PIN functionality. Solutions like shifting to chip and PIN or EMV cards, along with other reforms, have also been suggested by these companies previously. Improperly implemented EMV usage can make credit card fraud significantly harder to monetize. Absolutely. The biggest problem with regards to adoption of this technology in the United States has been the retailers. They have not wanted to buy the new terminals. And I think it's not just the retailers. And the reason I say that it's not just the retailers is because I can point to knowing about this chip and PIN technology probably 5 years ago, at least, maybe even earlier than that. And I know of many retailers that have gotten new card swipers, you know, new point of sale terminals in that time period. And their suppliers, which were the point of sale vendor application companies who sell this whole quote, solution that is supposed to be PCI compliant, which I laugh at that because I have yet to actually see any retailer that's fully PCI compliant. I think that whole thing, it's just funny. So they buy this solution, and what are they bringing as part of that solution? They're bringing old payment terminal technology. They're not bringing the technology that has the capability for chip and PIN. Now, you would think if you're a point-of-sale vendor, you would just sit there and say, guess what? This is part of the standard protocol now. This is what you need to buy. We're going to sell you this terminal. It's backward compatible. It's forward compatible. There you go. Another point that the Trend Amplified Losses report makes with regards to point of sale, they say that for retailers, hotels, restaurants, and other service providers that rely heavily on point of sale systems, it would be worth examining the possible entry points that attackers can take advantage of. This means that not only should they lock down the point of sale security through application control technology in order to limit the execution of programs to only those that the point of sale system should be using, but companies should also look at the different parts of the entire network that attackers can breach, because every single time I've read one of these reports about how a point of sale system has gotten breached, it was because the networks did not have subnet level security based monitoring, SIM logging, and security controls. And so one of the things that they could do, which again, I'm not seeing companies do this, point of sale vendors, they are not doing positive application control. And a lot of it is because their software is garbage. Their software is ancient, old stuff. They aren't running it on Windows 8.1. They are not using UEFI boot. And unless you use UEFI boot, you can't use Secure Boot. They're not buying systems that have the trusted platform module built into it, which is a component of the motherboard. And I mean, TPM, sure, it'll cost you maybe like another $20 to $30 per system. So in comparison to the use of that point of sale machine, even at the high end 30, they're going to use, even at the high end of $30, they're using that system for 5 years. So what is that, $6 a year? I mean, it's completely ridiculous to be making an argument that the inclusion of TPM, Trusted Platform Module, so that you can actually have secure boot and utilizing a more secure operating system like Windows 8.1 with UEFI, their argument that, oh, well, that just makes it too expensive for people. No, too expensive in what realm? Would you prefer to have $100 million of uncontrolled breach cost, or would you prefer to have a controlled cost that says, wow, I'm just going to choose to implement systems in a secure as possible way? I mean, you're never going to get to 100% security because we live in a very dynamic threat landscape. However, when I see point of sale vendors, and I stress the fact that the retailers rely upon the point-of-sale application developers and the point-of-sale vendors to actually define the standards, because they're building these solutions. They've got terminals, they've got card swipers, it's the application itself, they define what's happening on the network layer, and all of the ones that I've seen in retail locations are atrocious. I mean, I find that they're not PCI compliant any which way you slice it. So I will go on with the report here. It also talked about how there is still a significant gap between the time when a patch came out and it was actually applied, which I find to just be absolutely astonishingly ridiculous. I mean, how many years has it been since the I Love You virus came out? I think that was 1997. I mean, I remember way back then it was that all kinds of companies got hugely compromised because they were 6 months behind on patches. Really, can you guys not get your systems patched in a timely fashion? Is the question that I would ask to everybody who is managing systems. And so Trend, even, you know, last year, they're finding still it is. They say gaping security holes were left unpatched in widely used software and platforms, and these continue to be exploited to instigate attacks that rendered the targets defenseless. So defense in depth requires that you actually patch. That means you need to have a system for systems management deployment. Patches for Windows, patches for all Microsoft apps, Flash, Shockwave, Reader, Acrobat, QuickTime, Firefox, Chrome, I mean, basically anything, Java, of course, anything that interacts with the internet has to be patched in a timely fashion. And I still find IT managers, not my clients, I will tell you, okay, all of my clients have got their ducks in a row, but I still find IT managers that I run into where they're not watching the ship. And I found one recently whose SUS server, they had not been properly approving patches for about 6 months. So all of the systems under their care were about 6 months behind on patches. This is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I'm to the point where I very strongly believe that you need to have a multi-layered patch deployment mechanism. And that's exactly what I do with Kaseya. So I will program Kaseya such that it will deploy, you know, approved patches. But there is a secondary system, and it's called the built-in default automatic update functionality. And I configure that appropriately for the system itself, whether that's a server or workstations or whatever it happens to be, or a different type of server. So that way, even if something isn't quite going right in the primary patch mechanism, then the secondary patch mechanism will pick it up. But if what you've got is strictly a primary patch mechanism with no secondary, well, then what protocols do you have in place to guarantee that your systems are actually being fully patched in a timely fashion? I know that Kaseya will show me the patch status of every system that is connected to that Kaseya server. Will SUS do that for you? I mean, my recollection of the last time I worked with SUS was, it was about 8-10 months ago or so, maybe a little bit longer. And so, I mean, fairly recent. And at that point in time, it did not make it easy to find machines that were unpatched. I mean, just the way that it shows you that information is not very user-friendly. And the other thing I found shocking that Trend revealed in this report is they were talking about how still web applications were vulnerable to SQL injection and cross-site scripting attacks. And, I mean, what do you do with that? I mean, good grief. I think if you have a website, you really ought to just download a copy of Kali and pen test your own stuff. You really should be blocking cross-site scripting, not only at the Internet Explorer browser level, but you should be blocking it at the perimeter security defense level as well. And they showed a statistic of 67.7 websites, percent of websites out there, are all running on Linux. So you got basically 68% of websites in the world are running on Unix, some flavor of Unix, Linux, whatever. And so that means that you need to have a whole nother patch cycle for that. So if your website's not running on a Windows system, well, then you need to patch that. And what's your underlying database layer? Is it MySQL? Is it Microsoft SQL? How, you know, are you patching that? They talked about the main reason whereby mobile banking was getting breached, and they found that people were falling for social engineering lures, which is part of these phishing attempts, and these things were designed to trick people into giving out sensitive information like account numbers, usernames, and passwords, and they were pretty darn successful at doing that. And they recommended that banks start to use more advanced defenses, including the use of multiple transaction authentication numbers, potentially card readers as well. And, I mean, I've been talking for years about the fact that improved, true two-factor authentication should be standard operating procedure for banks and banking websites, not this, you've got your security phrase, or you've got your little security photo or whatever. If all of your authentication mechanism is on the endpoint and the endpoint is compromised, well, then you really just don't have any additional security at all. And interestingly enough, Trend talks quite a bit about multi-factor authentication improvements in their report. And as I said, again, if you want to see this in more detail, I'm going to have it posted. They talked a lot about the CryptoLocker and the ransomware frequency type of things that they saw in 2014, and that the way to actually handle this, to mitigate those risks, was to avoid clicking suspicious links, backing up your important data, checking who sent you the nasty emails, double-checking the message content, and ensuring that all of your security software is updated. And of course, it goes without saying to make sure that your system is actually patched. So then they were talking about the phishing attempts have doubled. So while overall threat volumes had decreased in 2014, the number of phishing attempts almost doubled. And this then means that we have this giant strategy shift that needs to happen, and that strategy shift is centered around doing a better job of filtering out those things, not only at the email server level, but at the perimeter level, and also end-user training. So if you are an IT manager, I think you need to put together a little end-user training session for your staff about phishing attempts and train them. Well, that's all I have for this week, and hopefully you have a good weekend.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.